We've talked about a lot of individual players, Russ, but I've got here the this is a transcript from the honours boards that are still over there.
Oh, yeah.
Lions Den,
yeah.
You know, one for each year.
Yeah.
You might just like to have a look through the names there and see who
what triggers
in your memory.
Cyril Thomas was a hooker of note who had a Welsh trot. I think he was a policeman from memory. Mickey Booth, obviously. Alan Ricketts, who was a local boy, who was a prop. Dick Smith, Terry Hobson, Alan Townsend, as we've spoken about. Roy Folk. Brian Keir was a Lydney outside half who tried his luck here. Bob Timms, Spider, as we called him, because he was a long gangling bugger, and I said he reminded me of like a tarantula coming at you, really. So that stuck, and he became Spider Timms. He's got a garage.
He didn't own up to that.
Well, he would, you know, Spider. And, Roy Long, who unfortunately has left us. John Taylor, Captain Gloucester in the centre. Also, Captain Leicester was a representative on the rugby union. Unfortunately, he died. Dave Owen, who was a local Spartans boy, number eight, who played some outstanding games of four. Well, he also got in the county team, which was that step above, scored three tries and got dropped, which was, something that he could never get over. And neither could we, really, to be quite honest. Alan Holder. Alan, an outstanding footballer, centre, fullback, was here for many, many, many a year. Never quite made that sort of ultimate step towards international, but played a lot of times for the county. Was a lovely footballer. Died within the last 12 months, unfortunately. R. Smith, Bob Smith, also worked for the Ford Empire, Peter Ford's greengrocery business. He used to drive one of the trucks. Big, bulky wing three quarter, who was another guy that was, as they say, local boy, done good, as the terminology might be. Hal Simmons down here was in and out. Another good forward, played number eight or in the back row. Reggie Chamberlain was another Spartans hooker who came and played. Gary Mace as well, was the one, as I said, was a scrum half, who was likened to Hayden Tanner, or the best scrum half since Hayden Tanner. And a little story about that, because you can tell them now. We played Swansea on the Saturday, where he had an outstanding game. Particularly as the weather was conducive to his style of play. He was built like a cruiserweight boxer, but was very quick off the mark, and had this phenomenal long pass either way. We played at Bath on the Wednesday following that, and he had another outstanding game there. And he came to me, because we were quite close mates, and he said, there's a bloke out there, just offered me £3,000 to go north. This was professional. And he said, what do you think I ought to do? Well, £3,000 in those days was a hell of a lot of money, really, you know. And I said, he was about to get married. I said, well, you know, it's not for me to tell you what to do. You'll have to think about it carefully. And I always thought that he would take it, because Macy was not one of the world's great workers, put it that way. He was in and out of jobs, but always dressed very well for a man on the dole, as you'd say. But he didn't in the end. I think Hillary, his wife, persuaded him that he was better off around him, so he didn't go. But he was offered terms.
Counting as well.
It was. Well, what it was in those days, because you know, this was the thing, really. You know, we're going back to the old, my sort of, not coaching, but fitness training, really. These guys were fit anyhow, you know. There's another guy, Mick Potter, who always used to, he worked for the, I think it was the gas board or the water board. But you know, he'd be on the pickaxe all day long, and then he'd come and train, and then he'd be on the pickaxe again, and right the way through till Saturday. Mm. These guys were fit, and this was why I think they had the the benefit really and came off not second best against the Welsh teams, who predominantly were coal miners, I suppose, when they were steel workers. A lot of the guys, big physical workers. But yeah, they were.
He seems to have been another player's player as well. You know, I mean, lots of the ex-players speak very warmly of Potts.
Yeah,
having him on their side.
Mickey Potter was a big man, an excellent player who again could have gone further. But it was in that era. Gloucester were not the fashionable club then, to be quite honest. And I think it was only sheer persistence at 40, and because he was a self-made man running his own business, assisted him in getting the honours that he deserved, really. I mean, he should have played for England anyhow, you know. Alan Brin came in and set up the sports business and got another couple of, well, got some more caps. But they were... They didn't fit the bill as far as national teams were concerned, which was a shame because they were better footballers than the guys that got it, in our humble opinion, put it that way. And I think the local populace used to think so as well. The citizen, I think his name is Michael Dineen, had a reporter who was obviously cherry and white, mad, daft, and probably wrote very supportive press about us when, quite honestly, we probably didn't deserve it, but you needed it at the time. But I mean, he was one that was always making comments, the fact that these guys should have been in the national team and would have been great for it, put it that way. But so in that playing era, there was just, I think it was only the two of them, really, that went on and got caps. Was Peter Ford and
Alan Brin.
Yeah. Two good footballers.
Yeah. You have to say that's a refrain that goes back over 100 years, actually, that the England selectors wouldn't look at people from way out here in Gloucester.
No.
Back in the early 1900s, they actually appointed somebody to look into this problem.
Did they? Yeah. Well, you know, as I said, there aren't many true hotbeds of rugby like this city has got, is there, I think? And in the days gone by, or in those days anyhow, I think if you'd have gone into any street and said, right, well, we'll form a rugby club, you'd have one by the end of the week, really. They were rugby crackers, and... and you had that natural progression. The local clubs nurtured, fostered these outstanding footballers, you know, a lot of them, along with some being very physical people, but they were also, there were some very good footballers in it.
Well,
and it was the honour then to just to sort of come through this pyramid, and you know, if Gloucester suddenly saw you, you'd have the trial in the very beginning, which... those were chaotic in some occasions, because you imagine everybody came out to try and prove he was better than so-and-so. So the trials, I don't think, proved a hell of a lot, to be quite honest. But by word of mouth, it came to be that so-and-so at Gordon Lee or Spartans, or in the latter days, Matson, or... Spartans as a club must have provided a hell of a lot of players here, as did Gordon Lee, really. True Gloucester people who came on board accordingly, you know.
Of course, that was underpinned by a formal agreement for more than 100 years between Gloucester and the local clubs.
Was that? Yeah.
Well, they agreed to release players to Gloucester, and in return, Gloucester provided financial support to the clubs.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys went back, better for it, didn't they, really?
Yeah.
And to that degree, helped the local club environment. I know it was the same down in Bristol with the Bristol combination, wasn't it? That they supplied Bristol with a lot of players. But see, Bristol were looked on as the fancy Dan boys, really, as Gloucester were looked on the powerhouse boys.
So,